America,
the S&P,
the ASX stocks.
This is Motley Fool Money.
Welcome to Motley Fool Money, the podcast that loves its footy on Triple M, naturally. And I'm Andrew Page, and this is Scott Phillips.
G'day, Andrew. G'day, fools. Thanks for joining us on this grand final weekend.
Yes, it is all happening this weekend. But before the footy starts, we are going to talk money and finance. And this week, it's about the banks. Are they selling the family silver? Also, speaking of grand final season, are sports rights the only thing that stand between the networks and oblivion? We have to talk a bit more politics. Trump has proposed company tax cuts. Is this going to be the saviour of the economy or a massive screw-up?
And we should say, we'll talk not necessarily politics, we'll talk about a political issue, but hopefully from a business perspective.
All about being apolitical, mate, at least on air. Magellan sponsoring the Ashes.
Who?
Magellan, big fund manager.
Okay.
Is that the sign of the top of the market or what?
Wouldn't be surprised.
We'll talk a bit about that. And, mate, it is your turn to get on your high horse.
Isn't it what?
And rant.
Up I get.
But first, so I said... The banks are selling the family silver.
Yeah.
CBA ditching its wealth management business.
Yeah.
Is that a savvy move? Jeez, there has to be a mountain of money to be made in that area.
You'd think so. Let's take a couple of steps back. So you think about our banks, Commonwealth Bank, ANZ, Westpac, NAB. These guys are the biggest lenders in the country for residential mortgages and the biggest lenders for business.
Yep.
But they've kind of got this sideline of selling insurance products, so life insurance, income insurance, car insurance, but also wealth management services. I think about fund managers. If you're going to go invest your money, your CBA bank manager might say, hey, come over here. We've got some products we can sell you.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a great CBA superannuation product or term deposit, or not term deposit, but an investment fund, something like that.
Yep.
And it's kind of been a way they've burnished their business growth over the last 5 or 10 years.
Well, it seems like a hell of a train to get on top of. You know, when compulsory superannuation came into effect, you know, every Australian is going to be tipping 9% into this.
It
just seemed like a crazy thing not to. So when all that happened, it spurred some huge takeovers and acquisitions. Commonwealth and Colonial probably being the one that springs most obviously to mind.
Yep. And we have the fourth largest retirement savings pool in the world.
Now, that's not per capita.
That's right. That's total amount of money.
Now, that's a little old Australia of 25 million. That, you know, on a per capita base, I'd suggest it's probably even higher.
Mate, I reckon you're probably the largest per capita.
Yeah, it'd be up there. Maybe Norway, actually.
Possibly.
What was my point, Scott?
I have no idea, which is normally at the status quo.
That's right.
So here's the thing.
Okay.
You would imagine if you were a bank, you would imagine this great growth opportunity, something you'd be absolutely clamoring to drive and push and grow. But at the moment, they're selling those businesses instead. And here's the problem. This is going to be part rant, part explanation.
Okay.
Right? So the banks are basically saying, so the government has said, look, the GFC was crap.
Mm-hmm.
We never want to have that again. We're going to make sure, like all the rest of the world, that our banks are appropriately capitalized. That means they've got enough money to back the loans that they're giving to make sure there's nothing that can upset the banks and cause.
So we get into a bit of trouble, a whole bunch of people default in their loans. These guys are still standing at the end of it.
Right, as opposed to what might otherwise happen, which is the banks don't have enough money. There's a run on the bank. The bank can effectively be insolvent, like
wiped out.
Northern Rock or UBS in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Royal Bank of Scotland in the UK. These are decisions made to try and keep everything afloat. Now,
that sounds eminently sensible.
To do that, the bank's got to find some more money.
Okay.
Now, they could cut the dividend.
No, never going to happen.
Or they could issue more shares and raise more capital.
Mm.
Or they could start selling the family silver.
Okay.
So this is what they've done. Faced with a shareholder base who were saying as a group, don't cut our dividend for the love of God, and don't raise any more money because I don't want to be diluted anymore.
Mm.
The banks are looking around and thinking, well, what else can we do? And the answer right now is, I guess we'll sell our wealth management businesses.
So a pretty easy solution.
Well, easy is one way to put it. But the problem
is... a short-term solution.
That's exactly right. And so if you think the house price has been on an absolute tear for the last 20, 30 years. We've talked about that many, many times in this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Think about what happens when that isn't the case anymore.
Yeah.
When house price growth slows down, when business lending slows down, what's going to be the biggest growth in financial services? It's going to be wealth management.
Mm.
That superannuation pile continues to grow. The fees continue to come in. It is going to be forever and a day the most sustainable long-term growth path that any of these banks have. And yet that's exactly the business they're selling.
It's a lovely business model,
isn't it?
Well, once you've got your customer there, you take a clip of their, what they call AUM, assets under management, or FUM, funds under management.
Yes.
So
FU2.
Yeah. So I get... you know, let's call it 2% of all your money. And
right.
that money grows over time.
Every year, by the way.
Because of, A, you're contributing to it on a regular basis mm-hmm. through your compulsory superannuation guarantee. And ideally, over time and on average, that pile of money is just getting larger naturally because
right.
of the money you're invested in.
Right.
And so someone who joins up a financial product in their 20s, you've got 40 years of getting, have a little bit of their life savings, you know, for that entire period. So it's something you'd want to hang on to, you'd imagine.
Exactly right. And so this is why I think this is probably a, on balance, crazy decision for the banks to make. It is short-sighted to my mind, but they are saying, well, there's issues and we need some money and we can get a decent price for it, so we might as well sell it.
Mm.
I reckon, I would bet that a decade from now, some bank CEO is saying, if only we could have 2017 back in, if only we could keep those businesses that we're selling, that insurance money, that wealth management money, that was the pot of gold.
Yeah.
And we sold it. We sold the goose that laid the golden eggs, if you like.
Yeah. They could always buy it back, in theory, of course, but it depends what the price is going to be.
And guess what? If you're going to buy it back, you've got to raise some money. How do you do that? Well, you ask shareholders for the cash.
Oh, jeez.
It's a very tough one.
So thumbs down for you and me in terms of those decisions,
I think it's fair to say. I get why they're doing it in the short term, and I get that shareholders right now are saying, we don't want to cut the dividend. If this was my business, if this was your business, there is no way in hell I would be selling the wealth management business. I'd take a little bit less in dividends today for a much, much greater profit tomorrow.
You know, I think that's a statement that's generally true outside of the banks and what we're specifically talking about here. You know, I love my dividends as much as the next guy.
You do.
But, you know, I think it's eminently a sensible thing to do. Look at TPG. We talked about this last week, right? They've got a whole bunch of capital expenditure requirements coming up. They cut the dividend. The actual initial market reaction was one of positives. Like, yes, we're going to get less in our pockets this year because of cash, but it means that we have less stress on the balance sheet.
Correct.
We're putting that money into investments that will hopefully provide a very good rate of return and therefore support further dividends increases down the track.
You got it.
You know. So I think... You have to, when you're looking especially at dividends as a source of income, notice that there's going to be a little bit of variability in there.
Yeah, right.
And the question isn't how much money can you possibly put in my pockets, but how much can you put into my pockets after allowing for future growth of the business and making sensible investments long term.
That's a very good summary, Matt. Well done.
Thank you, mate.
Motley Fool Money. Financial advice for real people, not trust fund hippies. Sign up for the newsletter at fool.com.au/MMM.
Let's talk about footy season.
It's footy season. It's not only footy season, it's grand final season.
Grand final
this
season.
This weekend.
That's all. It's a great weekend, isn't it?
Isn't it?
So for a lot of people, three-day weekend.
Yes.
Not for us because the market's open.
I know. Monday we'll be at work.
Damn it. But we get daylight savings as well.
I love daylight
savings.
You
know, so it's a good time to be alive.
Speaking of savings, my favorite type of saving is daylight saving.
Nice. So what we thought we'd talk a bit about here is that, you know, this is historically been a huge bonanza for the commercial free-to-air networks.
Yep.
You get a lot of eyeballs. You get to charge a huge amount for advertising space.
Correct.
But there is talk that, well, in the future, are they still going to be retaining those rights?
Yep.
Maybe a Netflix. Maybe you'll have to have a Netflix account to go in and watch the footy final. In fact, over in New Zealand, that's been touted in terms of the rugby.
Yep.
So the question is, we've seen huge disruption in this space. That's continuing at a rapid, rapid pace.
Mm-hmm.
If the free-to-air networks lose the broadcast rights, is that it? Are they over? What's the point of those networks if they don't even have that?
Yeah, that's a really good question.
I mean, unless they want to watch, you know, reruns of Hey Dad for the umpteenth millionth time. I mean, what do you do?
Not good, is it? Martin Kelly Architect, as I recall.
Yeah.
So look, here's the thing about sports rights. It's incredibly expensive for the networks, but it's one of the things they can do that currently Netflix doesn't do, and currently Foxtel isn't allowed to do because of the anti-siphoning rules.
Right.
So basically the government have said, look, we'll carve out a space for the free-to-air networks to make sure that you can watch the Rugby League Grand Final, the State of Origin, the AFL Grand Final, a whole lot of others, the Ashes, without having to buy a pay TV subscription.
Yep.
So that kind of makes sense to some
Well, it makes sense.
Level.
Why should sport only be restricted to those who can afford pay TV or whatever it happens
right.
to
now,
It's
here's,
a fair argument.
Exactly. Now, here's the problem, though. As less and less people are watching free-to-air TV, while there are more and more alternatives elsewhere, and frankly, with the networks themselves in some degree of financial distress, the amount of money they can afford to pay the sports themselves for those rights is going to fall.
Yes.
In the past, the sports have kind of been used as a bit of a loss leader, if you like, to try and get people to watch the networks to then hopefully watch
Look
their other
the
programming.
Look at the Olympics and Channel 7, right?
Exactly.
That's a great example of
Exactly.
that.
Yeah. If you take that away, though, or frankly, if the networks can't afford to pay for those sports rights because they're simply under more financial stress than they used to be,
yeah.
because the rest of their program isn't working because we're all watching Netflix or YouTube or, you know,
Stan, right? Insta streaming Foxtel. Service here. Yep.
So that means there's less money to make back those expensive TV rights, and the sports start to make less money.
Yeah.
What do they want? They want the most money they can get.
Of course.
They're going to start petitioning the government saying, guys, this anti-siphoning rules, this doesn't do much for us. We actually much, much rather take some money from the Foxtels, from the Netflixes, from the Googles and the YouTubes to try and basically support that part of our business to maximize the sports rights value.
Of course.
If the networks don't have it, Foxtel's kind of both, right? But think about Netflix. Netflix specializes currently in packaged series and single event TV. So, one night stand kind of comedy stuff.
Yep.
Plenty of TV series, plenty of made for TV type stuff. Really, reality TV, news and sport is pretty much what the freeway networks have going
right,
for.
Right. Yeah.
You start to peel some of those away.
Yeah.
What's left? Yeah. You know, and frankly, once you've got to pay for Netflix or Foxtel because you want to watch that sport.
Yes.
Then why go back to free to air? Now, I have to say, I think that's the doomsday scenario. Mm. I don't think it's necessarily the only choice we have. Mm. But man, there are so many Australian households buying Netflix now, paying for other things. It's very, very hard to imagine the networks can afford to keep paying for sports for too much longer.
Yep.
The flip side of that is, where do their viewers go when they lose it?
Yes. It's not a pretty space. I think we've said repeatedly, particularly the broader media area, including newspapers and all that as well. There is undeniably going to be some incredible opportunities in there with all of this negativity. And, you know, it's always hard to predict. Right. If you fast forward, but, you know, there'll be some we'll look back on and go, wow, that was super cheap at the time. But, geez, you are really playing with dice there, aren't you? It's super, super tough. So it's a pass for me, anything in that space, frankly.
I think that's true. I think there's a price to pay and a point at which some assets are attractive. I have to agree. I think it's probably a little bit too keen. Frankly, the business with the most upside was actually the one with the most downside, which is 10.
Yeah.
And that went into administration, which is exactly your point.
Right.
9 is flying high in the ratings. Yep. 7 already had a very high multiple because it was winning the ratings.
Yep.
In those scenarios, you want to be a little bit careful. 10 was kind of 10 had a really big leveraged opportunity to come back. If it managed to get some viewers, it couldn't do that, of course, and went broke. And that's kind of, in a nutshell, exactly the sort of problem we're talking about.
Oh, such fleeting things to the ratings. Way too risky for me.
Real money advice from real people. Not just a couple of dicks with a Porsche. Get more at fool.com.au/MMM.
Mate, let's talk.
Speaking of risky,
let's talk tax.
Tax and Trump.
And let's try and be apolitical as we possibly can here, and really just to stress the point, we want to talk about the tax implications here more than the political ideology that may be behind it. But Trump, he's had a bit of trouble trying to get some things through lately. He's come out and he said, since forever, we're going to cut some taxes and massively so down to 20%.
This is the corporate rate of tax.
They're going to simplify the tax brackets for individuals.
Yep.
There's a few other things too. They're going to allow corporates to repatriate a whole bunch of trillions of dollars in US companies have overseas.
Correct.
And they don't bring that back because there's a big tax liability if they were to do so. So few things here that sound really good from a business perspective. Is this something to get excited about for investors? Is this the next wind in the sails for corporate America?
Look, I think there's a couple of things. If you own US shares and the tax rate is cut, then there is an instant bonus.
Yeah.
Right? If you're paying a multiple of after tax earnings, which we do.
Yep.
And those after-tax earnings grow by 5 or 10% just because the tax is cut.
Yep.
Then by definition, your company earnings are higher.
Yep.
And so forth, therefore, the shares should jump higher as well.
Hooray!
Exactly. From a very specific one-off change,
yep,
it's probable that the market is worth more after a tax cut than before, all things being equal.
Okay.
So yes, if you're a shareholder in US companies, that's a great thing.
Fantastic.
And the tax being brought home in theory from overseas to the US might give those companies more room to pay dividends or buy other businesses or make other investments.
Yep.
So again, there should be a net benefit from the tax being returned in and of itself.
Okay. Fantastic. Well, let's do it then.
Well, this is the we're not going to be political, but we all talk about the ideology behind some of this stuff, right? The motivation behind it is what Mr. Trump and others would call the trickle-down theory of economics. And the idea is, if you give people tax cuts...
What year is it? 2017? We're still talking about this?
Kill me now. The idea is that if you give a tax cut... So, look, the thing is, it makes sense on the surface, right? If I say to you, and if I give you a tax cut, will you go and spend more money?
Yeah.
You're just kind of, yeah, of course I will. Sure. And everyone else thinks the same thing. And so, great. The more we cut taxes, the more money gets spent. The more money gets spent, the more the economy booms.
Yep.
Therefore, cut taxes, grow the economy, everyone's sweet.
Okay.
The problem is that the very, very small, tiny little problem is that in reality it doesn't work. And so this is kind of the challenge, is that...
not even in theory, right? Like, it's been tried.
Well, that's right. Multiple times.
And multiple points in history and geographies.
So specifically, the U.S. state of Kansas tried this about 5 years ago. Right. It has been a complete and utter a disaster. I'm not exaggerating it. The entire state has just become a complete basket case. Yeah. The Kansas legislature is rolling back all those cuts, trying to basically fix the economy again. Mm. The whole thing went completely to pot. And so... it doesn't work in theory. It doesn't work in practice. But unfortunately, it still works when you're thinking ideologically. And so this is the problem, is that Trump and the others are saying, this is what we should do. And again, this isn't being party political about Trump. It's not even about being particularly philosophically political. It's just literally saying, this is a policy that, while it makes sense at the very first level, if you think, okay, more tax, more economic activity, or less tax, more economic activity.
Yeah.
Yes. But it doesn't work. And the reason it doesn't work, generally speaking, is if you give tax cuts to those who don't need them, they're not going to spend it. Mm. They're much more likely to save the money than spend the money.
Yep.
And where do tax cuts come from? They come from nurses and doctors and teachers. Mm. They come from defense spending. Mm. They come from other spending. Mm. So you're taking money out. The government is a tax revenue goes back into the economy. As much as it doesn't suit some people's ideology, any government expenditure goes into the economy.
Yeah.
You take that away... Mm. And replace it with tax cuts. Mm. If I take a dollar out of public spending and give it to you, and you spend 80 cents of that,
it's a net negative.
Yep. It's madness. And frankly, this is the problem with ideology and economics. This is where you've got to start with the very reality and work backwards, rather than ideology and hoping reality fits it. Mm. If you want to increase economic activity, you actually give tax cuts to people who can most spend that money, which is the lower paid.
Yeah.
And yes, it might not suit some ideology, and that's unfortunate. That's just kind of life. I'm not even saying you shouldn't necessarily do it. What I'm saying is, if you're going to do it, if your job is to cut taxes to stimulate economic activity, it's got to come from the bottom end. If you give someone on welfare, someone on the pension, someone on the minimum wage an extra buck, they will spend that entire dollar.
Yep.
You give that dollar to Frank Lowy, who go, hey, I'll save that.
Yep.
Well, and you take money out of the economy to do it. It's madness.
You know what? And there's another point. So beyond that... there's, this thing gets touted, share prices, markets go up, people get excited. Mm-hmm. You get various talking heads on the telly sort of saying, oh, how you play this trade. Apple's got a whole bunch of money they could bring back and this and that. Yeah. And to me, it's just so crazy. And we've had so many recent examples of this. Remember when Trump came through, it was going to be wonderful for infrastructure. And it was going to be wonderful for this. And I mean, this is very, very recent history.
That's right.
And it just didn't play out that way. So anyone who positioned themselves to benefit from those, that scenario, has absolutely not had any benefit whatsoever. So yeah. I guess, and it's a point we keep coming back to, it's always the same conclusion. When you see these things, yes, there are potential positives and negatives out of all of that, but you've also got to roll into the probability of it occurring, and occurring in the manner that you think it will. And to me, it is pure speculation.
Yeah, that's right. When Barack Obama came to power, it was all about clean energy, and companies were supposed to do well. And and then when Trump came, it was supposed to be banks and infrastructure and so on and so forth.
Yep. None of it's happened.
No. It's thematic investing very rarely works. Themes can be a great way to look for some ideas to start with as a starting point, i.e., if more people are getting older, then therefore maybe healthcare might be worth looking at.
Yep.
We know here in Australia that looking at healthcare REITs, i.e. property trusts, has been a disaster. Even though people are still getting older and retiring and going to nursing homes at greater rates.
That was my rant last week. The other one was funeral parlors and that,
Exactly.
It's just, you have these big generalized sort of themes that are undeniably true, but yet how they play out is a very different story.
Indeed.
Get more Motley Fool money advice at fool.com.au/MMM.
Mate, let's talk about, very quickly, we're speaking of sports. Magellan is sponsoring the Ashes.
Yeah.
So tell me a bit about Magellan.
Magellan's a financial services company. They're a fund manager.
They haven't been around that long either, have they? It was only 2006.
It's a very special thing. So Magellan, basically, they're a fund. They've done fantastically well.
Oh, yeah. Don't mean to bag them.
Started by Hamish Douglas and...
Yeah. Great investor. What's the other bloke?
Bloke's name? We're not big on details here at the Motley Fool. Magellan was started...
Apologies.
Magellan was started, basically, did a great job. They got the Magellan flagship fund originally, went to the US, bought a whole lot of businesses there, raised a whole heap of money from Australians here to go investing in Australia and overseas. Fantastically done. Incredibly, incredibly, incredibly well.
Yep.
Did a really good job of marketing themselves to consumer, to investors and to financial planners.
Yep.
Really, really made a massive difference. Had a great impact on the world of finance.
Mm-hmm.
But now they've decided, following in the footsteps of Benson and Hedges and Telstra and
many, many others.
They're going to sponsor the Ashes.
So why is that such a bad idea? Plenty of people sponsor the A. You get wonderful attention, great exposure. Why not?
I tweeted this morning that if this ends up being the market peak, Magellan will be the one that called it for us with that sponsorship. There are some things worth sponsoring. If you're a telco and you want to get people to sign up for your brand, they're making decisions every day, every week, every
consumer
month.
Facing kind of stuff.
If you're an ice cream company, if you're a baked beans company, I get why you'd want to.
Totally.
If you're a financial services company, the chances of that money actually going to help more and more individual investors buy your products, get a positive ROI on that return, I think is incredibly
unlikely. So you think the bloke watching the cricket, he sees brought to you by Magellan. You know what, honey? We need to get a new fund. It does stretch.
Get Magellan on the line right now. Yeah. I'm gonna go instead of smoking a Benson and Hedges or something with Telstra.
Yes.
I'm gonna jump on the blower. I'm gonna call Magellan and say, take my money.
Yeah. There are some spurious ones. We've seen a few other listed companies who do this kind of stuff as well. And, hey, we're gonna do this and we're gonna sponsor. And it's gonna increase. It doesn't always 1-300 Smiles. A very small. Relatively small ASX listed company that amalgamates dental practices. They sponsor what stadium is it up in Queensland?
The 1-300 Smile Stadium.
That's right.
The North Queensland Cowboys home ground.
And again, look, there's some exposure there, but I just don't know if that's the kind of advertising that leads to an increase in sales, which is an interesting thing.
Oh, mate.
Motley Fool Money. For more, go to fool.com.au/MMM.
Mate, we better round this up.
Not yet.
Oh, sound effects?
I'm on my high horse, Andrew. Okay.
That's right. How could I forget?
Here we go. Everyone strap in. Sit down. Get ready. Here we come.
Okay. I'm going to need coffee. Run. I'll be back in 10 minutes.
I continually get incredibly frustrated by the fiction that is portrayed that somehow individual investors can't manage their own finances. The fact that you need some sort of magic formula, secret device, black box, Christ knows what else, to manage your own money is completely, I was going to say it was confounds me. It doesn't confound me at all. You know why? How do you sell your services to somebody? You say, don't worry, you pretty little head, Andrew. I'll do it for you. Mm-hmm. I'll take your 2%. I'll take your outperformance. I'll do all this for you.
Mate,
don't we do that? You can't do that.
I'll do it for you.
Well, here's the thing, mate. We don't do it by pretending people can't do it themselves. We say, if you want to invest your own money, we'll give you some ideas. You can follow it if you want. You don't have to if you don't want to. We're not going to charge you a percentage of fees. We're not going to take a bonus. We're going to charge you a subscription for a bit of education, some stock recommendations, and then you follow it your own way and see if it makes sense to you.
Okay.
The idea that's in the papers regularly by certain commentators will say, you know what? It's all very, very hard. We're the only ones who can help you. Come and sign up with us just in case.
Well, it makes sense, right? If I'm sick, I see a doctor. If I need filling, I go see a dentist. If I need a house designed, I go see an architect. So if I need financial advice, why on earth wouldn't I see a financial professional?
Oh, you should. But the difference is you're seeing either an advisor or a salesman.
Right.
If your dentist said, Andrew, that's a nice set of teeth you got, but I'm going to replace them all for you with better teeth. Special teeth that you can't get yourself, I can get for you, and I'll charge you every year to have those teeth in your head. What do you reckon?
Are they teeth like that James Bond character? That might sway me.
Jaws. How about instead of, I'm not going to charge you to design your house. You want me to look up? I'll knock your whole house down. I'll build you a new house. You can't do it yourself. Don't try and plan your house yourself. Don't tell me how many bedrooms you want. I'll tell you how many bedrooms you want. Don't tell me how many front doors. Don't tell me how many bathrooms. I'll sort that out for you.
Mate.
Yeah. And I'll charge you 2% of the house value every year thereafter so you can live in your own house. What do you reckon? Deal?
Well, look, I'm going to play devil's advocate here just to get under your skin a little bit. But, you know, there is... we see it all the time. There's a lot of recklessness that happens on financial markets where people sort of get in a little bit beyond... where they're prepared for,
yep.
I suppose. There's a whole bunch of behavioral factors that steer us into very silly decisions.
Correct.
That we do with our money. And, you know, so maybe it's not a bad idea that I give it to someone who can do it all for me. Someone's got a good track record. Yeah, I'm going to pay them, but I pay for any service. So why wouldn't I pay for that service to save me potentially from myself and to get, frankly, a good return on my
money? I think that's very sensible.
Mm.
But that's when you go yourself to someone else and say, I need some help. Can you please do this for me?
Yeah.
I know I can do it myself, but I think you'll do a better job and here's why.
Right.
That's a very, very different. That's when you decide for yourself to go to that person and say, can you please help me?
Right.
It's not someone saying, this is all really hard. It's very difficult. Look, you can't do it yourself. You can't do it. There's a bloke in the paper writes regularly, you know, you can't be Warren Buffett. Stop trying. Just get a broker to help you.
Yeah.
That broker who's paid by the trade, You reckon that broker really is going to help you do what you, make you, is that broker making you money?
Yeah.
It's the old story, the old book that was written a million years ago now called Where Are the Customers Yachts?
Oh, great.
All the financial planners, all the brokers, all the shiny suits in the CBDs of the country, all got their yachts down at the marina, they've all got their fancy cars. Where are the customers' yachts?
Yachts? Wall Street, the only place where people in Bentleys go to get advice from people who catch the train to work or something like that.
You've mangled it horribly, but you got the gist perfect.
Thank you.
But yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what right. So look, I think good fee-for-service financial planners are fantastic. Definitely. The difference is when you go to an accountant or a dentist or a doctor, you don't pay them a fixed set of your assets for the rest of your life.
Yeah, it's a good
deal,
isn't it?
You pay them per hour for the service they're providing.
Yeah.
Go to a fee-for-service financial planner, get some great advice.
Yep.
Follow their advice
yep.
and go and do really, really well. And they'll charge you every year to go and see them and update your strategy. That's perfect.
Yeah.
When someone says, don't worry, your pretty little head, I'll take care of it. I'll charge you 2% for the privilege.
Yes.
And I'll do what you could do yourself. Or I won't change the strategy every year, but I'll still charge you 2% every single year.
Yep.
They are absolutely taking it. That's a financial salesperson, not a financial planner. And that's the difference.
Yeah. And I do agree with you, mate. I think there's finance investing is one of those things that obviously you just can't go in completely cold. You mm-hmm. need to do a bit of research. You need to... do a bit of reading.
Yep.
I would actually say, the more you can educate yourself, the better off you're going to be.
Mm-hmm.
What I would agree, where I really do strongly agree with you, is that degree, that hurdle that you need to get over isn't a big hurdle as many people will make out to be.
Yep.
So when it comes to sensible long-term investing, there's a couple of golden rules that are true today, that were true 100 years ago, and will be true 100 years hence. And they're not that complicated.
Yes.
You know, if you can master high school maths or frankly, year 7 maths,
yep.
You're there.
Yeah,
right?
Totally.
So I wrote about it today for our members. It's like if you get to a point where things are so esoteric and so much full of jargon and so technical and requiring all of this kind of stuff, I think, frankly, it's purely they're designed to obfuscate what the simple truth of the matter is. So it always comes back to the basic things. Spend less than what you earn.
Yep.
Invest the difference wisely in a diversified pool of quality assets and sit on your bum.
Yes.
Is basically what it is, right?
Exactly. And ignore the siren song to do something.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, mate.
I think I'm done.
Dismount?
I think I'm done.
Dismount.
All right.
Okay. Well done. That does wrap it up. Before we go, don't forget you can subscribe to the Triple M Motley Fool Money podcast through iTunes or your favorite Android podcast app. You think I would have memorized this by now? I still have to read it.
Because, and you'll pause nicely so I can say, or you can go to fool.com.au/Triple M. And you can sign up for a free newsletter from our boss, Bruce Jackson, and ourselves. We hope you will.
Mate, thank you very much.
Thanks, Fools.
Till next time. Fool on.
Fool on.
The Motley Fool and people appearing in this program may have positions in the companies mentioned. General advice only. Please speak to your financial professional to understand how it may pertain to your situation. Subscribe to the free newsletter at fool.com.au/MMM. The Motley Fool operates under Financial Services License 400691.